since. The most recent being He Said, She Said, which spent 12 weeks on the Sunday Times bestseller chart and is out in paperback now. So, Erin, welcome, and such a pleasure to talk to you.
Well, thanks for having me.
So, Erin, when did you first feel grown up?
I think I first felt grown up when I got my first diary, and I remember really clearly when it happened. So I would have been 22 and on work experience at Cosmopolitan magazine, which was my break into journalism. And I remember turning up to work experience and people saying, you know, put this in your diary for a day ahead, a week ahead, and me think, don't be ridiculous, God, you're such suits, man, why do you need a diary? You know, can't you be like me and just hold it in your head? What's up with you guys? You're so, like, tied to your life. And then I actually realised it was because I hadn't really had anything to do for the past 22 years. I hadn't had a life that wasn't mapped out in, you know, after I graduated, I did a series of not great jobs in call centres, and I worked in a pub, and I always knew where I was going to be, and nothing ever broke out of the routine apart from maybe a haircut or a dentist appointment. I even knew which clubs or pubs I would be in at any given night because I was such a creature of routine. You know, every now and then a holiday would come in, I would write it on a calendar and that would be fine. But a diary, yeah, that you have to carry around so that you might need to make plans while you were in the middle of things or when you were at your desk, mm-hmm, I remember thinking that was just such an old person's thing to have. And then of course once I was on work experience and I was out doing roving reporter stuff and I was having to forward plan, I lasted about 10 days before I got one. And I do remember thinking that that was a real rite of passage and that I finally arrived.
So what do you think is the hardest thing about being a grown-up, do you think?
I don't think I've done the hardest thing about being a grown-up yet, I'll be honest with you. I think it is the point which lots of my friends are reaching at the moment, and I'm fortunately not there yet. It's the point where you are where the buck stops. Mm-hmm. So I'm really lucky that I still have both my parents with me. The point, I think, at which you really, truly become an adult is when either you lose your parents or they become dependent on you. I can still turn to my own parents if I need advice about looking after my own children, or if I need somebody to look after my own children, or I want to get a second opinion on something. They are still there for me.
What's the best part of being the age you are? And I hope you don't mind me asking how old you are.
I don't mind it too. I'm 41. Early 40s seem to me to be a great place to be because I still feel, I mean, you know, bits are going, you know, the upper arms are on their way out, the skin under my eyes isn't what it was, but I'm still, you know, I'm still young enough to be physically fit and I can still go to the gym and lift weights and I can still run around with my kids, and I really appreciate knowing that I won't have this health forever.
So what has being older taught you that you didn't realise when you were younger?
I think it's taught me that the world isn't as black and white as I used to think it was. My convictions remain my convictions, but I used to see the world in terms of you were either with me or against me. Certainly my politics were a lot more militant when I was a younger woman, so I used to believe that, for example, that certain parties had the answer, and now I realise how complicated and nuanced things are. This is partly, I think, me being older and understanding more and having more empathy, and certainly I judge people a lot less now, and I think that's just life experience. The more people you meet, the more you understand what's going on behind the surface.
So what would you say now to your younger self, if you were going to talk to Erin 20 years younger than you, what would you say to yourself?
I would probably say don't be in such a rush to achieve things early. Now, I mentioned earlier that when I left university, I did a series of dead-end jobs. All I'd ever wanted to do was write, but I remember feeling very clearly that because I hadn't written anything for my student newspaper, it was too late to try to make it in journalism. And I told myself that at 21, which now, of course, seems laughable. Mm. I've got friends who are still getting book deals, for example, well into their stepping out of my study, which is a box room on the landing next to the girls' bedrooms, I almost feel that I should sort of climb out the window and run around the park a couple of times so that I can create some space between work head and parenting head.
Well, thank you so much, Erin. That is your grown-up life. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Yeah, so that's a really good question. So what we talk about nowadays, particularly in terms of breasts, is actually women knowing what's normal for them. You should know what they look like. I know that sounds obvious. We all sort of know what our boobs look like, but you should know what they look like and are they changing. If one's always been bigger than the other, then that's fine. But those sort of things, really important, knowing what's normal for you. And then in terms of getting checked out, mammograms start from the age of 50, but sometimes now in some areas, the invitations are coming earlier for women, and there are pilots to start mammos at 47 or even 48. And you can find out when it's starting for you from your GP. And then obviously there's a section of women who may have family history of breast cancer. And if you have a family history of breast cancer, you really need to, first of all, find out what that is. So when did the person have it? Was it before menopause? Was it after? Who is there in the family? Are there aunties? Are there cousins? What cancers are there on your dad's side? Because that can also be relevant for breast cancer. And then take that whole family history to the GP and say, you know, this is me. Do I need to be referred to a family history clinic? Now, actually, you need to have quite a really significant family history to be involved in a family history clinic. So at least three relatives who are quite close to you who've actually, you know, had breast cancer. But it's still worth the discussion, and it's still worth that sort of vigilance that you might be under.
What about other types of hereditary cancers? For example, a friend of mine was telling me that her mum has had bowel cancer in the past. Mm-hmm. So she now voluntarily goes and gets a private check once a year. Now, bowel cancer also runs in my family, but one generation removed. So at what point should you be going to get these things checked? And should you be paying perhaps privately to go and get these things worked out, sorted out?
Well, it's a balance, isn't it? Because it's a balance in sort of like over-checking and then all the anxiety and the potentially sort of false positives that go with that. And then also obviously making sure you're being screened enough. So yes, bowel cancer also is hereditary, and it can be hereditary, it can run in families. And there are different sort of statistical models of who is at risk or not. So again, that should be spoken about with your GP, particularly if they're younger bowel cancer, so under the age of 50.
So let's talk about periods now, because at this age, sort of 40 plus, they can be all over the place. Some people have heavier ones, some disappear, become more frequent, infrequent. How do we know what's going on? Because we now know this phrase perimenopause, don't we, like premenopause. How do we know if that's what we're in, what we should be doing, if it is, should we be doing anything?
So again, it's all about what's normal for you. So what's a heavy period to me might not be heavy for you, and sort of vice versa. It's very normal in your 40s for periods to change, but well before the perimenopause. So it might just get heavier, they might change. The perimenopause is really the time before the menopause. And what a lot of women don't realise is actually your periods can get a lot worse and a lot heavier, and actually more frequent, and that can even be for as much as 2 years. So if the sort of earlier stage that a woman can go through menopause normally would be 48, you know, perimenopause could start around 45, 46. I would say that all heavier bleeding should always really be checked out. And I say that because heavy bleeding or bleeding in between periods can be a sign, rarely, but importantly, of womb cancer. So it's always really important to check. But yeah, your periods change in your 40s, and they can do. And if, what I always say to patients is, if you're not coping with that, if that's stopping you having a relationship, going to work, looking after your kids, then that's a problem. If it's not and you're coping, then it's not a problem. But if it's a big change and it's interrupting your life, that's a problem that needs to be dealt with.
So you should go and see your GP?
Yeah, you should be discussing that with your GP, or if you have a gynecologist, with a gynecologist.
Okay, let's talk about our memory, because again, it seems like an age thing, but you don't know if it is an age thing. I know loads of friends who say, oh, I've just forgotten to do this, or you know, this has slipped my mind, or they just can't remember a basic fact. And I know it happens to me, and you think, well, it's just because I'm tired, or I'm busy, or I've got so much on my plate. concerned if we really feel like our memory is going.
Yeah, I mean, I hope it is just age, because I've certainly got that as well. So I've heard this described really well in terms of dementia and people worrying about, are they getting early onset dementia, which I have to tell you is incredibly rare. But we all have situations where we're at home and we leave the room to go to another room to do something. And you get to that room and you've totally forgotten what you've got.
All the time to me.
Okay, so if that is happening, then that's absolutely fine. What you need to worry about is if you go into that other room and you've forgotten what that room is. That's when it's really a worry. I think the number of things that women are often juggling at this stage in their lives, it's not uncommon to forget, you know, that you actually went into the kitchen to find your car keys.
Okay, and energy levels. Again, seems to be a really common conversation that I'm having with a lot of friends. They're tired, they're exhausted. Is there anything that we should be doing? Is this, again, a cause for worry, or is it just a result of our busy lives?
I think energy levels is really interesting because it's something people come to the GP with a lot. We have something which we call tired all the time, or you'll see it on blood forms. The doctor would have written TAT because they're sort of, you're worried about your energy levels. And so it is a really common issue. And I think people forget to look at the really obvious things. So first of all, sleep. Are you sleeping enough? Is it purely just a situation of not sleeping enough? Diet. You know, a lot of the time women skip meals, or they're trying to lose weight, or they're not sort of great with what they're eating and not eating nutritionally good or nutritionally dense food. And that can be why people are tired. So once you've looked at sort of basics, then there are other reasons why people's energy levels drop. So thyroid problems are really, really common. 1 in 50 people have an underactive thyroid, and that makes people feel sluggish, lacking in energy. Far more common in women than in men, and sort of 30s and 40s is quite a common age to be diagnosed. B12, which is one of the vitamins that we get from animal-derived products, so either meat and fish, or you get it sort of from eggs and dairy. People can have deficiencies of that, and that can make people very tired. Vitamin D, because we're all lacking, sadly, in sunshine in this country, so that can be another reason. So there are some vitamin reasons, some mineral reasons. I have to say, in the majority of women who ask me about it and we do some blood tests, often it comes down to lifestyle, just juggling too much. But if it's a consistent issue, and if it's something that, you know, it's actually, again, really affecting quality of life, it's stopping you doing something that you'd really like to do, then that's a problem and that needs to be looked at.
Dr. Ellie Cannon, thank you very much for taking us through what happens to our bodies in midlife.